And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down to some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show. Goes from Huntsville back over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden. Down to that loveliest little village on the plains we call Auburn. Straight across the border to what we now get to call once again Fort Benning. And oh, by the way, big old patches in North Georgia and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, I got a real quick touch on a text. So Ken from Harvest, I'm apologizing to you now because I was trying to read your text while the music was playing and then didn't know what it was saying, so I chose not to read it. Now I realize all he's doing is saying it'll definitely be an election, an interesting election cycle with the riverboat gambler, Coach Tuberville, getting in there. Did you know that was his, as a God-fearing gunslinger, he says.
I did not know that was his nickname, though.
Yeah, that was that's before your time, I guess.
My first college football season I remember was 09, so yeah.
Okay. He was known as a Tuberville, known as a riverboat gambler because he was willing to take the trick plays, he was willing to call the hard plays, and he was willing to do things that other coaches might not have done, including like go for fourth down, that kind of stuff, you know. Take the gamble. All right, let me go to the phone. So somebody who's been on the show multiple times, he's a friend of the show. He's definitely a friend to myself and the lovely Charlene. John Rogers has been a figure in Alabama politics for a number of years, and he is now working full-time for the last couple of years with Signal Analytics, which is a national polling firm that has a great reputation based out of Washington, D.C., and he's on the phone right now. John Rogers, how are you doing, my friend?
Bill Williams, I'm doing great, and Tommy Tuberville definitely had the riverboat gambler. I remember that nickname, that moniker, for one. Yeah,
I think he could almost pull that one in Alabama, and it would get caught up, you know. But then again, since gambling is always a divisive issue in Alabama, maybe he doesn't want that right now.
Touche.
Well, hey, man, listen, Signal Analytics, you guys are all over the place now. I know your founder, Brent Buchanan, it all started here in Alabama, but you guys see things all over the place. And so I guess I want to ask you, kind of broad brush right now, we're at the almost at the 100-day mark on the Trump administration. What are you guys seeing, hearing, sensing in terms of public sentiment on how things have gone?
Yeah, I think one thing that stands out, and we do national polling all the time, in our latest national poll, congressional Democrats had a net image of negative 15. So they were 15 points underwater.
Wow.
55% of voters across the country have an unfavorable view of congressional Democrats. Only 40% have a favorable view. And if you look at swing voters, 60% of swing voters, Phil, have an unfavorable view of congressional Democrats. Only 28% have a favorable view of congressional Democrats. And so that's been kind of the baseline reality for, you know, all of this, you know, first 100 days of the second Trump administration. Congressional Democrats are at the most unpopular that they have ever been in our national polling. We've been doing this monthly national poll for about 3.5 years now.
Wow.
And so, aside from everything else, aside from Doge, aside from Elon and what's going on there, or Tesla, or immigration, or everything else, congressional Democrats are incredibly unpopular. And you can see in D.C. that they are just kind of flailing to find a message that works, right? And they tried to unite with the federal bureaucrats and say, oh my gosh, you know, Elon is coming in here with a hatchet, and isn't this just a terrible thing that the Trump administration is trying to save taxpayer dollars. That didn't work.
Not at
right?
all. No.
Elon, in our polling, Elon's image has taken a little bit of a dive, but I mean, he has just gotten hammered by the media nonstop for the last 4 or 5 months. But Doge itself, you know, is pretty much, you know, the country's fairly evenly split over Doge. But if you ask the question, do you basically, you know, do you support efforts to cut the size of the federal government and reduce federal spending? Guess what? Majority of American voters are on board with that.
Yeah. They're always in favor of it until it cuts their part. But nonetheless, generally speaking, that's the sentiment that I feel like I get, is that folks are not dissatisfied with the idea of downsizing a bloated government. So that's good to hear.
Right. And even on immigration, you know, we'll get asked sometimes like, oh, well, this, you know, this case with the guy, Garcia, is, you know, is that hurting Trump when it comes to immigration? The baseline fact of it is the American voters, a majority of American voters trust Trump on immigration, and they trust the Republican Party on immigration more than they trust Democrats. And that was, you know, immigration was really the issue that was central, that along with inflation, to Trump winning in November over Kamala Harris. And, you know, the ins and outs of like a specific immigration and deportation case, you know, people may have different views on that, but still immigration is a winning issue for the Trump administration. And you could see that in, you know, what they choose to talk about. I mean, J.D. Vance is fine talking about immigration, and even fine talking about this this case with Garcia, because the White House, you know, they understand that this is a really good issue for them.
Is there anything that I heard this morning, just during my morning drive time, and I want to say it was on Fox, and it was Dana Perino saying that a recent poll she had reviewed said that Trump's numbers had slipped in certain categories, but overall was still very favorable. And I think one of the categories was the economy. Is there any kind of lack of sentiment right now, favorable sentiment on the economy, or is there anything else that's hurting him that we're not really seeing right now?
You do see. So we asked a top priority question where we ask people what they feel like the top priority should be for Congress. And inflation and the economy has risen over the last 3 months. And so, if you go all the way back to January at the beginning of the year, 28% of American voters, it was still the top issue overall, but 28% said that inflation and the economy was their top priority. That has steadily gone up from 28% up to 35% now. So I do think that, you know, there are some voters that are starting to get nervous about the state of the economy.
Yeah.
I think that the tariff situation, if you went back a week ago, that was something that really was making some voters nervous and anxious. And I think that, you know, you saw the stock market reflect that. And then I think you saw the administration kind of respond to that and say, hey, we're going to focus on China, and then we're going to focus on having discussions and renegotiations with countries on a case-by-case basis, outside of China.
Well, so let me ask you, to the extent you can answer it, so two issues that I've seen coming up that seem to be the playbook, if you will, for the Democrats. One is run out the clock, delay everything, use the courts to delay everything you can, and hopefully run out the clock on the Trump administration's ability to work. The other is try and selectively take out members of the cabinet. Right now, it appears that since they didn't get anywhere with Musk and Doge, that the idea is to just hammer Pete Hegseth. Is there any polling that indicates the effectiveness of the attacks by the judiciary or the effectiveness of the attack on the entity of Secretary of Defense?
We have not polled the DOD question in Hegseth recently. We have a poll coming up where we'll ask that question. But on the judiciary, we have polled that before and fairly recently. And for the most part, it's just kind of a wash, right? That, Republicans are kind of where you would expect them to be. Democrats are where you would expect them to be. And then independents, are just kind of split where, if you ask, do you feel like, federal judges are too activist in how they approach the law from the bench, you'll get a chunk of independents who agree with you on that and a chunk of independents who disagree with you on that. So I don't think that that's an issue that really is going to help the Democrats that much. Now, that also depends on, how disciplined the president is. And if he continues to be, somewhat disciplined in his rhetoric, I think that that will not allow that to become an issue. And then if he were much more, kind of sustained in his attacks and maybe a little bit more just very open in his rhetoric, that could possibly, hinder That could hurt him, I think, a little bit with independence.
So what you're saying is mean tweets at 3 a.m. could or could not go in his favor.
Right. I mean, I think what Democrats are – some Democratic consultants will tell you privately that what they think the party should do is just stand back. I mean, like I had a Democratic consultant tell me this recently. He said, yeah, our strategy, what we're telling our candidates is basically let the Trump administration flood the zone, let them do as much as they can, and their expectation is that the Trump administration is going to overreach, right, and that they'll make mistakes and they'll go too far, and then Democrats are going to try to step in and capitalize. But what's interesting is you also, that's not a uniform position on the left, right? Like, yeah. AOC and Bernie, they are not taking that position at all. They're out there on the, you know, try to make America a socialist tour. and they're, you know, they're probably turning off as many voters as they're attracting to their cause.
So the new acronym for their hats is MAST, Make America Socialist Tour. All right.
I do think AOC, I would not be surprised if she decided to run for president. And she, you know, I would put her at a probably tier one of the candidates, you know, of having a decent shot at getting the nomination. You know, I mean, if it's her, if it's Kamala Harris, and if it's Gretchen Whitmer, and, you know, maybe Gavin Newsom runs, AOC would be a pretty formidable candidate, I think, in that primary. And of course, she would be a great candidate to run against in the general.
That's almost scary to even hypothesize about AOC running for president. I find that to be both entertaining and fearful all at the same time. Hey, Matt, listen, in the next few minutes, we've got just a little bit left. Let me turn your attention to state. I mean, you spent a lot of your time coming up through various aspects of state politics here in the state of Alabama. You've seen the ins, the outs. You've worked the politics. You do the polls. We've got maybe a generational moment where I think every statewide office, with the exception of treasurer in Alabama, and maybe even adding in one U.S. Senate seat, are all going to be open with no incumbent. It's going to be a free-for-all. What are you thinking, hearing about Alabama, or for that matter, states in general, about where state politics are moving?
Well, you know, you're right. It is. I think it could be a sort of a generational election in Alabama if all these statewide races are open. And so, you know, there's a lot of scuttlebutt that Senator Tuberville may decide to run for governor, and we'll see if he does pull the trigger on that. And I think if he did, he would. I think most political observers would say he's going to be the favorite. You know, You know, it probably. You would have some other people that would run in the primary against him, but he's a popular figure in the state. He's, you know, he's got good relationships with the Trump administration. I don't know that a Trump endorsement would necessarily be a fait accompli, but, you know, the president could well decide to get involved in a primary if Senator Tuberville decided to run for governor. But, you know, that's a decision obviously he's going to have to make, and that's a very different job from being one of 100 senators. You know, if he did decide to do that, that obviously opens a U.S. Senate seat, and those don't come open that often.
Yeah.
And I expect that you would have a number of different people that would put their hats in the ring, and it would be, a very competitive primary.
I think it definitely would. I can think of several names right now. I mean, the question is, if Tuberville runs for governor, will Ainsworth run for governor against that heavy of a name ID, or will he do something else, or will he do nothing at all? There's that one. Steve Marshall is still out there, our current attorney general, who's got a great reputation and could well run for the U.S. Senate. And then, you know, I feel like there's probably going to be somebody from the business community. Somebody's going to step in with their, you know, personal wealth and say, I'm going to fund my own race. What do you think in terms of, and I got about a minute, are we trending towards a more populist, conservative, Trump-style state-level politics, or do you think that we will see more traditional status quo politics?
You know, the party has definitely become more populist. You know, that's just undeniable, right? And that's both at the national and at the state level. But the issues that you confront at the federal level are a little different than the issues that you confront at the state level or even at the local level, right? And there is no doubt that Republican primary voters have wanted the party, especially at the national level, to take a more populist bent. And, you know, you can understand why, because I think a lot of, especially social conservatives, they looked at the last 15 or 20 years and they say, well, Wall Street's gotten, you know, gotten kind of the upper hand in the Republican coalition, and but we're the ones actually providing the votes, and we want you to prioritize socially conservative things that matter to social conservatives. And it's at the national, you know, at the national level, the Republican Party has shifted more towards a populist direction.
Yeah.
And at the state and local level, I think that that still can apply. But people also want to make sure that they've got competent leaders who are going to be able to effectively govern at the local level.
Well, we'll see where it plays out, but I think it's going to be a wild one, man. I think that with all these open seats, you're going to have people who've never been in politics running for statewide. I think you're going to have people who are trying to move from one statewide to another. And I think you're going to have some names that have been around a long time suddenly facing people who have a more populist but yet unknown background to deal with. And it's going to be interesting to watch where the money falls out, too, for that matter. But, John, I got to leave it there, man. I appreciate you, as always, making time. Y'all do great work at Signal, and we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Still great to be on with you as always.
Thanks, John. All right, listen, I got to take a break. I ran long just to make sure I get as much as I could of my time with John Rogers. John Rogers, Signal Analytics. That's spelled C-Y-G-N-A-L, Signal Analytics. They do great work. They got a website full of information if you ever want to check it out. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.